theology matters because God is important. To put it simply, people are sometimes people are afraid of the word theology, but to put it simply, theology is simply just the study of God. And theology matters because God is the most important person in the world. God is not a concept. God is a person. So by teaching theology to our children, and why theology matters is because knowing about God and knowing God is what theology is all about. I love the title for your blog, Humility and Doxology. And I really think that doctrine or theology should lead to doxology or praising God. And we want our children to move from wonder to wisdom and to worship.
Welcome to Homeschool Conversations with Humility and Doxology, a series of interviews with real-life homeschool moms, dads, and other educators on all sorts of topics that affect our lives as homeschool parents. I'm Amy Sloan, a second-generation homeschool mom of five, and I am so delighted that you are here. Here on Homeschool Conversations, we'll discuss educational philosophy, family life, and more. Come chat with us. Thank you to everyone who has sent in a rating or review for the Homeschool Conversations podcast. I shared a couple last month and this month as well. I want to share a couple of the reviews that have come in. I so appreciate when you take the time to subscribe, rate, and review to the podcast. It's not only such an encouragement to me, but it really does help other homeschool parents find these encouraging conversations. So please take a moment today to rate and review Homeschool Conversations in your podcast player, and maybe your review will show up in a future podcast episode. If you need help to know how to do the review, just drop me an email to amy@humilityanddoxology.com, and I will work hard to help you figure that out. Today's review comes from Matt Miner, who says, Amy is creating great content to support homeschool families. Amy brings diverse voices together to help homeschool families as they take this journey. Her guests' voices, and importantly, her own voice, bring the wisdom of experience and lots of practical help and encouragement. Thanks, Amy, and keep up the great work. K.F. Harris says, my new favorite podcast. It's really hard to find a good podcast that you can relate to and is uplifting and contains truth in today's world. As a new homeschool mom, it's nice to have your podcast and other social media to turn to. Thank you. And thank you. I appreciate each one of the reviews that have been left and look forward to reading yours next month. Hello, friends. Today I am joined by Karen Chu. Karen is a pastor's wife and homeschooling mama of two from Manila, Philippines. She loves learning and sharing about classical education, covenantal parenting, and theology. Karen tries to chronicle her homeschooling journey, reflections, and projects over at Raising Covenant Children. And I have enjoyed many of your articles over the past year or so, and I'm so excited to get to talk to you today.
Thank you for having me. It's a real honor to be here.
Well, Karen, could you just start first by telling us a little bit about yourself and your family and why you decided to homeschool?
I'm a pastor's wife and a homeschooling mom of two. My daughter is 8 years old. She recently turned 8, and my son is 4 years old. So my husband and I planted a church in Quezon City in Manila, Philippines, called Pilgrim Community Church in 2011, which eventually launched in 2013. So we've been, doing church ministry. He's doing ministry as a pastor for about 7 years now, and that's our life. We're a pastor's home, and for me personally, I love books. I love collecting books. Sometimes I buy more books more than I can read them. I love plants. raising carnivorous plants. So it's pretty interesting in learning about that. And I love coffee. That is one of my passions. I've actually tried selling a few coffee gears before starting homeschooling. That was one of my side businesses, help out with the family. And before getting married, my husband, who was my then fiance, have already discussed about homeschooling, but I was quite apprehensive at first because I was mainly ignorant about homeschooling. About 10 years ago, the homeschooling climate in the Philippines isn't as friendly as it is now, especially during the pandemic. You know, everyone's, you know, sort of homeschooling. And about more than 10 years ago, there were only a handful of people that I know, like two families maybe, that were homeschooling in the Philippines. So it's relatively new here. It's not something, you know, like you guys in the US, they, you know, a lot of homeschooling families. So there were a lot of misconceptions at the very start, and the usual caricatures, you know, how are we supposed to socialize them? Can they keep up with their peers? So that's how I started. And then, of course, you know, when we got married, we started talking about it, but we didn't really get into it, just read about it and discussed it until our second child came. My husband and I decided to enroll our eldest daughter in a preschool, because this is the usual practice. This is what Filipinos do. We enroll our kids to school, and that's the usual practice. And we tried to do that. We tried to follow that route, and it was. But my daughter at that time, she was around 4 or 5 years old. She was coming home tired and worn the whole day, even in preschool. And it was also around that time that we learned that she had some learning challenges. She has dyslexia, and she was starting therapy around that time. So she was coming home tired and worn, and the usual excited child that we once knew was no longer there. And that's when I felt very sad to see that, to see her lose that passion in learning. And so when she was around kindergarten, there's nursery, pre-kinder, and kindergarten. During her third year of school, we decided to take the matters in our own hands and decided to homeschool her, pulled her out of school, and, you know, right in the middle of the academic year, we said, okay, we're going to homeschool. Because I think this is the best, way for her to learn. And I'd like to think that our reasons for homeschooling were pragmatic at first, because, you know, just to like to have an easy solution to get ourselves out of that situation. But it quickly became purposeful, because this is what we've been reading about, studying about, and talking about throughout, you know, this whole time. And it was an easy move because we've already talked about it, and it felt great to see that, you know, slowly she's gaining back that enthusiasm in learning. So when so that's how it started.
I like to hear that story too, because I think this year in particular, there may be many families who started homeschooling for more of those pragmatic reasons. It'll just be easier, less stress, and they're learning that they love it, and they're seeing all these other areas of value that now they're like, I don't think we're going to give this up. This is amazing.
It's the same way when I started with my, you know, tried to be proactive in teaching my son, just to converse with him at home. That's how I started my started posting online, so that I could keep accountable and sharing our learnings with other people. And that's how I found that, you know, it's helpful for other people too. And I really enjoyed, that's how I learned to love homeschooling. And that's when I realized, yeah, I can do this. And that's how we started.
You mentioned that homeschooling is a little different in the Philippines, especially 10 years ago, it was not very common. It's a little bit more common now. Just for those of us who live other places around the world, could you tell us a little bit about what homeschooling just looks like in general in Philippines?
Well, there are two ways of homeschooling in the Philippines. One would be you would be registered, and the other one would be independent. Being registered or being enrolled means you are registered with a homeschool provider. A homeschool provider basically processes all the papers and registration for you with the Department of Education, which is pretty big here. Each student, when they get to college or university, they're required to have a learner's number. Everyone needs to have that. So being enrolled with a homeschool provider is just an easier way to get all those papers done, and that means you have to submit portfolios regularly. It depends on the requirements of each provider, but it also means you have to follow a sort of subject-based curriculum provided by the Department of Education. The other side of that would be independent, which means you are not signed up with any homeschool provider. You can decide to do whatever you want at home. But if you do decide to be part of the system, there is that educational placement test that most families who are independent decide to take annually. That way, you don't have to take it because it's required for every grade. So for first grade, second grade. So some independent homeschooling families in the Philippines decide to take that every year, just so they would see how they would fare in the present system. So two ways.
And do you have a community of people around you that also homeschool?
Yes. Around maybe about 2 years, 2 years or so now, our church community, some of the families in our church community also started homeschooling. So that's my community, the people in our church. So shared values, shared beliefs, shared theology and everything. So it's great.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, what have been some of your favorite parts of homeschooling in these little years? Because your two children are still very young, and that's a very special time of homeschooling.
Yes. My favorite part, I guess, would be being the first witness to wonder. And that's very important for me. That was one of the primary reasons why we pulled our daughter out of school, because she was starting to lose that sparkle, so to speak, or that awe or wonder in learning, so that she could just keep up with the standards and what was required of her at such a young age. And I love that in the little years that you could engage that curiosity and having them ask weird questions about everything. I wonder also because I enjoy seeing God's world in new ways through their eyes. And because I'm older and I forget that, and that, you know, seeing the world again through their eyes is very precious in the little years. And you have a lot of that, and you have like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. And it's wonderful. The second thing, I guess, would be wisdom. I love that I am able to impart the knowledge of God through His Word. I treasure, you know, those times, you know, just like Timothy, where his mother and grandmother taught him that passage in 2 Timothy. I love that. How from childhood, from infancy, you have been acquainted with the Holy Scriptures and to salvation. And I love that I get to be a part of that, to see them enjoy, know about God's word, to love the Lord Jesus and love His people through praying for them. And I see that grow throughout the years, as little as they are, in months and weeks even, to see that little growth. It's wonderful. So I'm glad to be also one of the first persons to answer their weird and hard questions about God I enjoy that.
Yes. And then you get to have this front seat of just being right there, seeing God at work in their hearts. And it's such a precious gift. I love that stage. The older stage is also delightful for different sets of reasons. Just in case my teens are listening. But those little years are really fun.
Yeah.
Well, what have been some of the challenges of homeschooling thus far, and how have you sought to overcome those?
Math. Math has been difficult for us. I asked my daughter earlier, you know, what's the hardest thing in homeschool? And she just flat out told me, it's math. It's really hard, Mama. So how have we tried to deal with that? Slow and steady wins the race. That's what we try to do. Slowly, every day, try to master the concept. So we try to master the concepts. Just slow and steady along the way. And it's like that. Life is like that, I guess. When homeschooling is like that, you don't memorize or master things in an instant. Sometimes it takes a while to get there, and so I try to remind myself that, and I try to remind my children that it's life is like that. And the other part, I guess, is to do classical education in the Philippines, because not a lot of people are homeschooling, and the numbers, you know, dwindle down even more if you talk about classical education. So that's the difficult part. So I try to learn all I can from you guys, from the podcast, from blogs, and any way that I can to help myself be equipped in this area.
Well, that's a perfect segue to the next question I had for you, which is just what initially drew you to the classical homeschool philosophy, especially since you just mentioned it's not very usual where you are, and how is that influencing the way you're educating your young children?
I first learned about classical education from a homeschooling mom of four. She's one of the two that I know. And she, when I visited her house about 10 years ago, she gave me books by Susan Rice Bowers, Doug Wilson, and everything. And that's how that got me started. She asked me, "You really want to homeschool? Okay, here are some books." So she gave me a stack of books to read. And that's how I got started, you know, started reading and learning about homeschooling and classical education. And then while reading these stuff, I found Dorothy Sayers' essay, The Lost Tools of Learning. And it resounded so much of how I wanted to educate my future children. I was still, you know, I didn't have kids back then. So it resounded so much with me what she said, you know, whatever instruction fails to do this, an effort is spent in vain. That's what she said. And so, and I, when I read that, I said, yes, this is what I want. And I think Sayers' essay set me down into the rabbit hole, and I have been learning and unlearning so much along the way. How do we homeschool classically, or how has it influenced us? I can think of the five R's that I try to do. Here is how I try to understand it, because it's not being done so much. So here is my way of how I do it in the little years. So five R's, the three R's is what we usually know about, the reading, writing, and the arithmetic. And since reading Ravi Jain's and Kevin Clark's the liberal arts tradition, the revised edition, I incorporate two other R's in that five, to make it five R's. So there's reading, writing, arithmetic, and I've also included religion and rhythm. So religion for me, of course, is passing on the Christian faith, and to include the classical concepts of paideia and pietas. So paideia and piety, paideia as enculturation, indoctrination, passing on the tradition, and piety inculcating that love of God, love of neighbor, love of country, love of city. It's all included in that. And the other one would be rhythm, gymnasium and music, which is so much part of the ancient world. So that's how I try to that's how I now understand it. It could probably change as I learn some more, but this is how I try to summarize it, especially in the little years, the 5 R's: reading, writing, arithmetic, religion, and rhythm. And because movement is so important for me, I think it's helpful in learning, especially for my kids during the little years. So having that rhythm, that idea of movement, they don't have to sit still all the time. That's part of gymnasium. And music, which includes poetry, music, and history, and all of that. That's how I try to summarize it and how I understand it now.
Yes. Oh, I love that. And it's so encouraging to hear your perspective. I really appreciated the liberal arts tradition, the newly revised edition that came out, and that emphasis on that wisdom that starts from the fear of the Lord, like the end of wisdom really being love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. That really sums up what we're doing with education. And that is a whole different way of thinking. But if we keep that in the forefront of our mind, that has such implications for our priorities in our homeschool. Well, if you've been around here for any length of time, you know how much I love including poetry and other beautiful memory work in our family's homeschool day. But if you've wondered what are the best morning time poems to include, well, I have a free printable for you. Head to humilityanddoxology.com/100morningtimepoems and you'll get to download a list of 100 of my favorites. And then be sure to come back and let me know which ones your family has enjoyed. Yes. Well, you said that someone gave you this stack of books and was like, you want to homeschool? Here, read these. So if you were talking to someone who was curious about Christian classical education, you know, what are some of your favorite books or resources that you would pass on to them?
My favorite primer, I think, would be Dr. Christopher Perrin's Introduction to Classical Education, because it's so short and it's a free online that you can read through their website, Classical Academic Press. And like I've mentioned, the Liberal Arts Tradition Revised Edition, but it's not really an intro book. It's quite a difficult read. I read through it slowly, and whenever I reread it, I still get a lot of things. So I would start with that, the Introduction to Classical Education by Dr. Christopher Perrin. Yeah, and at the same time, I tried to enroll at classicalu.com, and that has been helpful for me to take some classes. And of course, podcasts, the free and easy ways, Soleil Sisters, Soleil Academy, your podcast, and the like. That's one of the easiest ways to get into that, to know how people are doing it, and that's the best way to go, I think.
And I'll include those links to the things you mentioned in the show notes for this episode, so people can check those things out. Yeah. Well, let's switch gears a little bit. Of course, we know that our theology and our education, it's all intertwined together, so they're not really two distinct categories. But for the sake of the conversation, you know, let's switch gears and talk a little bit about the role of faith and theology in our homeschool or in our family life. And I would like to know what role catechesis plays in your family, and maybe you could explain that for someone who's new to that concept.
Catechesis, or catechism, as it's usually known, comes from the Greek word katecheo, or to sound down upon or to instruct. It's an age-old practice not just by Christians, actually, by all sorts of people many, many years ago. It's a teaching tool or a teaching, you could say, a teaching practice that uses question and answers to help the one being instructed, the catechumen, to learn what they need to know. So we do that all the time when we give instructions to kids. What does mom need you to do before you go to bed? That's a sort of catechism. I need to brush my teeth. I need to take a bath. That's a sort of catechism that we do all the time. But for some reason, it's been lost in terms of passing on the faith. We think of it as a rigid way. Why do I need to do that? It sounds so difficult, but if you realize how kids are so great at memorizing things, catechesis is actually very helpful to help them know about the grammar of the Christian faith, especially in the earlier years. So it plays a very important role in our family because I see it as a way of fulfilling our vows as parents during their baptism. We promise, you know, as Presbyterians, we baptize our children because we believe that they are part of God's covenant family. And it's part of our fulfillment of our vows that we made as parents during their baptism, that catechism, along with family worship, fulfills those vows of, instructing our children with the principles of the Christian faith. And as summarized in our confession, one of the ways catechism, along with family worship, helps us fulfill those vows. And at the same time, I see catechesis as an application of paideia. I mentioned that earlier, and I think it's very important. Paideia actually is found in Ephesians 6:4, where Paul instructs, the Ephesian church, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. That word, their discipline, in the Greek is actually the word paideia, which has this idea of discipline, teaching, or passing on the culture. And paideia promotes that idea of indoctrination, of passing on the faith. The family, life, and culture, including the church. And that's what catechism is. Catechism is the passing on of the culture to the next generation. So I'd like to say that when we baptize our children, we are telling the kids, you're not free to choose what you believe. You are a child of God. That's what we say in the baptism. And God, as the sign of baptism is placed upon the child, through the pouring of the water, God is making a promise saying, you are my child, or I am your God, and you are my people, you are my child. And that's what it says. That's what baptism is saying. But when we catechize our children, through catechizing our children, we are telling our children what they should believe. So in baptism, it's telling them you are not free to choose who you believe. This is who you are. But in catechism, it's telling them, this is who you should believe, or this is what you should believe. And I think those two go hand in hand. It's the paideia, which is also the fulfilling of the vows, which is, of course, the raising our covenant children in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. If all of these go hand in hand.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so excited to hear the way you explained that. That was so helpful. I know that when I was younger and new to this sort of idea, when I guess I was first introduced to catechism back when I was maybe like 12 or so, and it seemed kind of strange and foreign to me at the time. But now it is one of my most favorite parts of our family worship, of our church life, of our family life. And even beyond just the children, I find it incredibly valuable even as an adult. There are those yes. truths that I can remember and clearly articulate some of the more difficult things to understand, but it's a simple way for me to organize what I believe, you know, as it expresses the truths of Scripture. So incredibly valuable. Well, why do you think theology, you know, matters even to our children?
Theology matters because God is important. To put it simply, sometimes people are afraid of the word theology, but to put it simply, theology is simply just the study of God. And theology matters because God is the most important person in the world. God is not a concept. God is a person. So by teaching theology to our children, and why theology matters is because knowing about God and knowing God is what theology is all about. I love the title for your blog, Humility and Doxology. And I really think that doctrine or theology should lead to doxology or praising God. And we want our children to move from wonder to wisdom and to worship. And I think that's what doctrine does. That's what theology does. It should lead them to worship God, because as the Westminster Shorter Catechism, the first one says, you know, man's chief end is to glorify God and to enjoy him forever. That, you know, our purpose is to glorify God and to enjoy him, and that means to worship him. And that's why it matters, because our purpose as parents is to impart these truths to our children so that they too would be worshipers of God with us.
Yes. Oh, amen. Well, I would love to ask you these final two questions that I'm asking all of my guests here in season 3. And the first is just, what are you reading lately? Because I know that you love books as well.
Yes. I'm down to my last two for December for this year. One is a difficult book and the other is it's an okay book. So I'm plodding through The Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self by Carl Truman. It just came out recently, and it's helpful because it basically tells you that ideas have consequences, and much of the ideas that we have consequences in our world today, and how that has shaped our view of identity. So that's the first one. The second one, Gentle and Lowly by Dane Ortlund. It's a devotional about the heart of Christ, how God sees sinners and sufferers. So I go through it chapter by chapter. Hopefully I could finish it by the end of the year. So those are the two books that I'm trying to read. Hopefully I could finish before the year ends.
Those both sound like excellent ones. The danger with asking this question and my podcast interviews is I always end up being like, ooh, I should go add that to my Amazon cart. I want to read all these books. Well, Karen, what tips would you have for...
I know what you mean.
Karen, what tips would you have for a homeschool mom whose day just seems to be going all wrong?
I know, right? Well, practically, I would say, if I have done the 5 R's, I'm good to go. For me, in our home, that's how I see it. If we've done those, we're good. Even if we haven't done all the extra stuff, it's fine. But for other, on other days when it's extra difficult, I just stop and take a break. I think that's what homeschooling had given us, the freedom to do that, to take a break and take a breather. And other times I just say, okay, kids, let's go outside for a nature walk. And that's what we do. And I need that too. I need the fresh air. And it's been helpful for me. And I learned this from Pastor David Murray, where he reminds us in Matthew 6, when Jesus tells the people, you know, that passage talks about worry and why you shouldn't be anxious about anything. And Jesus said, just look at the birds of the air, for they neither sow nor reap. And it tells you, you know, reminds you, look at God's world. Then you'll realize how infinitely small you are and how great our God is. Sometimes we get so caught up in the small details and even in the education of our children. And when you look at the grand scheme of things, you realize what ultimately matters. It's their life. They are embodied souls that would last forever. That's what I always remind myself, that what you do to raise these children, what you give them, the conversations, the stories that you give them, all of those shape them. And if your days are filled with a gospel, it bleeds through your conversations and your stories. And that's what matters. And because kids are embodied souls that will last forever, and we need to remind ourselves of that.
Yeah. Well, that is a wonderful encouragement here at the end and a great place to close. Karen, thank you so much for joining me today. And can you tell us where people can find you all around the internet?
I'm on Instagram and on Facebook, and my handle is Raising Covenant Children. I also blog semi-regularly at raisingcovenantchildren.com.
And I will include links to those things in the show notes for this conversation at humilityanddoxology.com. Thanks so much, Karen. I look forward to talking with you again.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening in on this week's Homeschool Conversation. For show notes and links to all the resources we discussed, head to humilityanddoxology.com/homeschool-conversations. And if these episodes are an encouragement to you, would you take a moment to leave a rating and review and to share with your friends? I am so thankful that you are here on this adventure with me. Let's repent of our constant striving, relish the joy of learning, and rest in the work of Christ on our behalf. Stand fast, my friends.